Well, good morning. For those of you that are out there viewing on the internet or the computer or however you've got this pulled up on Zoom, we have some handouts here in class, and I didn't have time to get all this in PDFs to send out. But if you're at your computers, you might want to go and pull up like the five love languages, a little thing from Gary Chapman, and then go to Willard Harley's His Needs, Her Needs, and pull up the 10 Emotional Needs. We're going to talk a little bit about that this morning. But before we do, I want to tell you a little story. And first, let me introduce myself. My name's Trent Wheeler. This is my wife, Debbie.
Good morning.
And we started doing these kind of programs a while back. I was blessed over the years working in ministry to be exposed to a lot of marriage training and counseling classes and things like that. And so we thought we'd share a little bit of that and a little bit of some of the challenges we've faced in our own marriage with others in hopes of helping them. But before we begin, I want to tell you a little story. There was this elderly couple, and they were sitting in the living room, and the TV was going, and the noise was happening, and they'd been married about 70 years. And the woman, she kind of leans over to her husband. She says, "Honey, I love you." And he says, "Hey, what's that? Come again?" And she goes, "Honey, I love you." And he goes, "What? What was that?" She goes, "Honey, I love you." And he goes, "Well, I'm tired of you, too." And so sometimes we have to work on communication. We have to work on how we talk to each other. This morning, what we're going to do is we kind of looked at all this material that we have when we do like a normal workshop that takes all day. And we thought, well, how can we compress this down? Or what do we want to pull from this? Or how are we going to make this most effective? And so we thought, what we would do is give you an introduction to some resources that are available. Studies show that when couples have some kind of marriage training, education, engagement, equal to or above about 8 hours a year, that the problems in their marriage drop significantly, divorce rates drop significantly, conflicts drop significantly. And so what we want to do is introduce you to some resources that you can go to and look at and give you a little introduction to what those look like in our time together. There are really three levels of marriage education that you can kind of stop and think about. And what I want you to think about, and this may relate a little better to some of the guys out there, but think about maintenance on your car. When you take your car in regularly, and you get an oil change, and you rotate the tires, and you have them do general inspections. And Debbie, believe it or not, in our household, Debbie's the best at this. I mean, she stays on top of when the cars need to go in, the oil needs to get changed, and those kind of things need to get done. But you know, when you do general maintenance, your car lasts a whole lot longer.
Yep, I agree with that very much. Something, too, that happens besides the preventive maintenance that you do to try to make your marriage great, and that's all so beneficial and it's so needed, is what is called early intervention. And that's taking the time when there's a sticky situation or problem that's just presenting itself to deal with it as quickly as possible. Some people might laugh and call it the Barney Fife method. Nip it in the bud. Let's get to it. And that's kind of the way I am even as a person, is when there's something going on and I'm not feeling easy about it, whether if it's between Trent and I or if it's even at my work situation, because I'm in a position where I have to manage a lot of people at work, I want to deal with things quickly, positively, have a good outcome, and move forward. And that's the same way with your relationship and your marriage, is to get involved, early intervention, find a way to talk about it and work through it. This is the time where you can catch a problem before the problem gets overblown and becomes a real serious issue or crisis. There's a lot of resources to help you to learn how to communicate and develop communication patterns so that you can learn what to say that invites the other person to be a participant in the conversation. There's programs like Marriage Dynamics. There's that can give you all kinds of guidelines. Trent mentioned reading books like Willard Harley, understanding our love needs, having those conversations, and sometimes over time, revisit those books and revisit those, because as your relationship changes, whether you're in the time of life where there are children that are involved, or you're just beginning your marriage, or you're ready just to enjoy the peace and quiet of nothing but you and your husband, or you, your husband and your spouse, or whatever, just having that peace in your home, your needs are going to change. So it's good to take this, these little quizzes regularly. Trent mentioned trying to spend about 8 hours in a given year. Just really focus on building your marriage, and it will pay off in the long run. Trent's going to talk about some of the crisis intervention opportunities.
Yeah, and in this early intervention stuff too, a great example is I'm one of those people that I think I'm a real patient guy. And so what happens is there'll be a little thing that'll irritate me and frustrate me, and then I just kind of tuck it away and say, oh, that's okay, I'm going to let that go. And then I let it go again, and then I let it go again, and then I bark at Debbie. And she's like, what are you so upset about? Because I didn't deal with the problem early. And so this idea of early intervention, of doing things, of building communication, and she's real good at kind of helping in that. And then there's the crisis intervention, you know, and that's when you're driving down the road and all of a sudden smoke comes billowing out of the hood of your car, and you have to pull it off the side of the road, and all of a sudden you find out, you know, you've got a $3,000 engine rebuild, or they got to rebuild the transmission because you didn't do the maintenance, you didn't take care of the vehicle. And the same thing's true in our marriage relationship. There are some great programs. A lot of people, they get to the crisis point and they're ready to throw in the towel. They say, it's over. There's no use going forward in my marriage, in my relationship. There's nothing. We've tried everything. That's the classic phrase. We've tried everything. I want everybody to hear this morning. You have not tried everything. One of the things I realized, there are so many resources, so many programs, so many great counselors, so much good stuff out there. I was blessed to work with two different organizations that had a 75% success rate working with marriages that are in crisis. And so there are programs like the Hope Weekend, A New Beginning, and things like that for couples that are in crisis. And so we want to encourage you to deal with that.
And I think one of the things, too, to think about is you think about preventive maintenance in your relationship, early intervention or crisis intervention, you will probably all be in each one of these places at some point in your life. Something's going to happen. I know that even with Trent and I, we have had some situations where we have been in every one of these situations in the time we've been married, and you have to take proactive steps to work through that, to get the support you need, the help you need. It's hard. There's challenges that come up that you never would have expected when you first got married. And then when you have children, there's challenges that come up that as much as you love your kids, and you do, we have four kids, kids are challenging. Whether they're little bitty and you don't get any sleep at night, or they're in school and you're dealing with adolescent drama, or they're in college and it's one more $2,500 check to Harding University. It's hard, you know, and so realize it happens to all of us, and it doesn't mean it's the end if you're really having a struggle. The important thing is to find the resources, to get the counseling, to go to a recovery workshop, to get the help you need. Because your marriage is the best thing that you have going for you and each other, but also for your children and for the kingdom as a whole.
One of the amazing things, Debbie and I went through a premarital counseling program before we got married. And when we finished the initial survey and going through there were like 8 educational training modules and all that, and you had a couple mentor, and they said, we have never had a couple that seems so aligned as you two, your values, your belief systems, all these things. You're just, boy, you guys are just going to do great. And then we found out that within the context of all of those things, that we had these nuances, like on child discipline issues and other things. Our general views were the same, but boy, when it came to implementation, we had very, very different ways of looking at things. And those were issues we had to work through, and those were challenges that we had to face. So now if you're following along in your worksheets, you notice that there's a test here for the 5 love languages. We don't have time in this short session to really kind of sit and go through all 30 of these. Some of you may have started before, and that's great if you started ahead of time. But I want you to do it. So I want you to flip over to page 2 on here on the love languages. At the bottom of the survey, you'll notice it says add the total number of these answers. Now, one of the things we really want you to do is take this information home with you. Don't try to do it all this afternoon. Matter of fact, the love language thing's pretty easy. You can do that in a short time. If you had to take a half hour this afternoon, you could go through the survey. But when we get into the emotional needs inventory and all of that kind of thing, you need to set aside an hour and a half to 2 hours to go through and really dig into those surveys, really spend time with it, and talk about it with your spouse. And so, we're just going to introduce these things today. But if you look at the bottom, there are five love languages. Deb and I had the opportunity, a couple of years ago to meet Gary Chapman, and he kind of walked through this in a small dinner group with some people that we were working with. And it was really kind of neat to hear him tell some of the stories of how these things acted out in different ways. But there's words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. Now, what I want you to do is just kind of at a gut level. Most of us have a pretty good understanding of where we are in our relationship, and we know what kind of speaks into our lives. So I want you to rate those from like 1 to 5. What's the most important, really the most important one or two? And Deb and I are going to share with you a little exercise as to what that looks like. And once you identify these, how you can use these to better communicate with each other.
And when you go to the quiz, some of you may have the same experience I had. And I was laughing through it, even though we've done this before over years. And that's why I say take it every few years. Again, because you can reevaluate because things change. I was telling Trent, this is so hard. I'm like, I want all of these. I want A, B, C, D. I want them all. I mean, how do you pick between, I like for you to touch me when you walk by, and I like for you to listen to me sympathetically. That's just an example. Well, we want both. So how do you pick one? So it's something that you have to kind of look through yourself and realize it's okay to want them all, but really try to think about what your biggest needs so it will help you to show when you total up the scores. Your answers may come out a little bit different than you expect, because that's what happened with me when we did this recently.
Yeah, and it's interesting. If you look at our two sheets here, Debbie has this narrower range between all five. So the value of them, whereas I've got this wide gap right in the middle of mine. I've got these really high scores in a couple of areas and super low scores in others. And so those are things we need to learn about each other, is how to communicate and how to relate to each other. And so, Deb, I'm going to let you go ahead, and she's going to talk to me about what her love language is, her primary one, and what that means to her and where it came from, and what I can do to help in that regard.
Well, Trent, when I went through this and went through all the questions, total up the scores, my primary love language was the quality time, which was a little bit surprised because I thought there was another one I thought would come out first. But what that means to me is just to have quality time with you where we are spending time together, it's good time, it's positive. We may be just doing basic things around the house and cleaning, even sometimes yard work, but sometimes quality time is going out to dinner, going for a walk on the beach, sitting and talking. Sometimes we have quality time watching the ball games on TV. Thank goodness we both like NCAA sports, because you let me be crazy and yell at the TV, and you just seem to enjoy that as I cheer on my teams. But being able to be with you and know that whether it's doing something as a project together, or it's going on a cruise and getting away over, or going away overnight for a kind of a long date night, that quality time, just spending with you, the comfort of it, the peace that's in that time that we share, it fills me and it means the world to me. And I really appreciate that with you.
Thank you. And one of the things I want to share, as you learn more about your spouse, you can also kind of begin to engage in certain things that you learn to understand. Deb's in a very high-stress job. She works in management over at the hospital, and by the end of the day, she's just emotionally exhausted. So early on, she would be driving home, and she would call me, and that drive home, whether back when we lived in High Springs or now that we're down in Ocala, it's a 30 to 40-minute drive home. And that was her opportunity for catharsis. So she'd get me on the phone and she'd tell me about her day and the stresses and the things that she was going through. And after a while, I'd see the phone coming and I'd be like, oh, here it comes. I get to hear all the horrible things that happened today. And initially, my attitude was pretty bad about that. It really wasn't the greatest. And so I started finding opportunities to make work calls and do other things. And
Is that why you take the dog outside?
That's it. That's why I take the dog out for a walk. But what happened was when she got home, all those stresses and all those challenges, they were still there. Mm-hmm. And so when she got home, we'd sit down and she would let those things out. So what I learned to do was to have that conversation with her on the way home. And at the same time, I'm typically home before she is. And so I can actually be carrying on a conversation and doing little things around the house at the same time. Sometimes maybe straightening up or do little things. So when she gets home, it eases that burden even a little bit more. And so I actually learned that it was to both our benefits to listen. Because if I didn't listen now, I'm going to listen later. And that's true about our relationships in a lot of ways. When we let things get pent up in us, mm-hmm. they're going to come out. And I'm the worst at that. I let negative things build up, and when they come out the wrong way. And so letting her vent, letting her have that time of catharsis works for both of us, and it makes for a healthier relationship. So on my emotional needs, I had two that came to the top. I also had quality time, which is something that we do enjoy. We really enjoy spending time together. And we're going to talk about this later, some of the things that we've learned in spending that quality time and learning to experience each other's likes as well. But the other one for me was physical touch. So Deb, I want to tell you a little bit about physical touch and what that means to me. I've known for a long time that that was a deep emotional need for me and that was my love language. And you know, interesting, when we get to the next survey, that kind of pops to the top again. And I kind of wondered, well, where does that come from? I've always felt relatively secure and all of that. But when I look back really far and really deeply, I grew up in a family where there wasn't a lot of emotional intimacy. There wasn't a closeness. I didn't see my parents hug. I didn't see any kind of real physical contact between them. I didn't see a warmth or a tenderness there. And then the same thing was true towards us as children. I don't remember that we were a hugging family and a touching family and a physical family. And so I think a lot of that need for touch grows out of that. And you've always been awesome at that. From the time that we first met, from you just kind of putting your hand on my hand if I'm driving, or us holding hands together when we're walking, or sometimes you just walk by and you put your hand on my shoulder, there's a certain sense of comfort and strength and support that comes from that. And I really, really appreciate that. So physical touch is important to me. You've always been very responsive in that way, and I'm really grateful for that. So when you go through these, that's what you want to do. You want to stop and you want to do several things. One, you want to explain where this comes from, where it grows out of. But as you do that, too, it's an opportunity to provide affirmation to your partner. Even if they're doing something in just a very small way, when you reaffirm those things that are due, that are positive in your life, you know what it makes them want to do? They want to do it more. That when they get positive reinforcement, it says, wow, that means a lot to me. It does. Sometimes Deb will come up and she'll rub my shoulders, and I said, oh, I can't tell you how much that means to me, how stressed. And so I make a big deal of it. Because, you know what? If I do, maybe she'll do it again. And so... reaffirming what our spouses do when they speak our love language is really, really helpful to us. So we're going to pause here for just a minute. And is there anybody here that can share an experience or they've been through this before, or when they looked at this, something really jumped out at them as they looked at the love language? You got something you want to share with the class? Yes, sir.
I think one of the classic mistakes that you may hear, I made it, is that I take my love language and I assume that my wife needs that love language. So that's mm-hmm. how I try to love her.
Yeah.
I have to find out early on, no. Find out what your spouse's love language is and love mm-hmm. them that way.
Man, that's a fabulous point. And for I'm sure those on the video probably heard it, but he said, what we tend to do, and this is really this is kind of a nature thing with everybody, we want to give the way that we want to receive instead of giving the way the other person wants to receive.
And we don't do that purposefully. It's kind of subconsciously, because we think, well, this makes me feel loved and special and cherished, so it will the other person. But you're right, it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah, great.
Like I said earlier, needs can change over time.
A great example would be me saying, Deb, you know what? I just know you're going to love watching a Die Hard movie tonight. So that's speaking my language. That's not speaking her language. Her language would be a Hallmark movie. And so that's a great point. I appreciate you bringing that up. So if you kind of flip over and you look at this, one of the things you see is there's different ways to speak into people's love languages. First of all, as we go through these again, words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. One way to do is to do this through actions. Some of you may remember the old movie with Rex Harrison, I just went blank.
My Fair Lady.
My Fair Lady, thank you. In the song, Freddie is in the street singing, "Don't Speak of Love." She sings the song, "Don't Speak of Love, Show Me." You know, we can give lip service to doing these things, but our spouse really wants us to engage. So with words of affirmation, those can be verbal words, or they can be written notes. I read a story one time about the actor that was in Law and Order, Jerry Orbach, that played Briscoe. On the TV show. And he comes around, it's kind of a coarse old, you know, New York City detective. But the truth is, he was this very gentle, loving, compassionate man. He wrote his wife a love letter every day of their life. And she has the whole collection, and later, after he passed, she had them published in a book. And so we can do things. Quality time, Deb mentioned vacations. She has a countdown calendar on her phone every time that we have a vacation. The getaways together are really important times for us. And it's also a way for us to share things together, and we'll get into that in a little bit later in the session.
It's always good to spend that time with each other. We look forward to it. And I know that in the last year especially, I think it's really been, I know I felt it, harder to spend that time together in some ways. I mean, you're at home together all the time, but at home together doesn't always feel like time together, as if when you go on a date or you have a dinner. And with the pandemic and so many places closed or limited seating, having to wear a mask all the time when you go anywhere. We had two vacation trips canceled last year, so we just kind of sat there and watched, okay, we're going to watch TV for a week. So, you know, not that we still found ways to do things. We played a lot of Scrabble. We're both kind of competitive, and, man, he beat me twice by more than 100 points. I was like, I have got to turn this around, and I did before it was done.
Yes, she did.
But finding quality time together, even when it's difficult, like the time that we're in now, is still very, very important.
And we're still trying to plan vacations and hoping for the best. Keep that in your prayers. Giving and receiving of gifts, we're not stuff people to a large degree, but gifts don't have to be big, magnanimous things. They can be, one of the things that Deb likes, flowers. So about once a week, if I'm at Publix, I just grab flowers out of the thing, and she comes home to flowers. Or
some Jamocha almond fudge ice cream from Baskin Robbins. Simple.
And sometimes this giving and receiving of gifts things, guys, learn to listen. I get my Christmas shopping, I'm done early. By the time we have the tree up, all my stuff's done, bought, and under the tree. And she's like, I hate you. But I may hear her, we may be in a store, and she'll see something in June, and she says, oh, that's really pretty, I like that. And I tuck that away, and when she's not with me, I'll pick it up for Christmas or some other time. That then I don't have to worry about it. Then I don't have to, as we're getting near the holidays, I don't have to think, oh my goodness, what am I going to get her? What does she need? It's already done, so learning to listen helps. Mm-hmm. Acts of service, household tasks, helping around the house, the yard, whatever. If you're a younger couple and you still got children at home, helping with the kids, giving mom a night out away from the kids.
Mm-hmm. I told Trent, I think I've mentioned it before this too, but even as we were talking this weekend, I remember when our kids were younger and there was just a lot of activity, and today's kids, I mean, I remember from when I was growing up, there just wasn't the same amount of activity when I was growing up for kids, it seemed like, in my world, as there is now, because kids are in this and that and two sports and drama club and choral, and they play two music instruments, and they have to, you know, this just goes on and on and on, and there's 10,000 birthday parties in the next 2 weeks. And so it's really easy sometimes just to get caught up in that. And I would call my mom once, and I said, Mom, for Mother's Day, I want 24 hours alone in a hotel, just me, nobody, no kids, no spouse, nobody. And I said, is that wrong? And she goes, you don't know how many times I wished I could have had that growing up, you know, when you were young. And it's not that we don't love our kids, but sometimes, like Trent said, giving us that time away to have that time together. There was a period of time in my life when I lived in Memphis and my kids were really young and we were trying to figure out, because I had a group of friends, and how do we have quality time? I've got these kids and they've got three kids and they've got these number of kids, and what do we do? So what we came up with is we created what we called a babysitting co-op. So on the first Friday of every week, first Friday of every month, the Smiths would watch all the kids, and the other three couples went on a date with no babysitting charges. And on the second Friday, the Jones would watch all the kids. But the deal was, all the kids, if you had the kids, you had to make it cool. So it kind of became a competitive thing between the parents. We're going to make it cool. The kids loved it because they got to be together and play. And we loved it because we had from 7 p.m. till midnight to go out with no kids, just us. I know, babysitting to bed, which is also nice too. But it's just finding creative ways to make that happen at whatever stage of life you're in.
And then physical touch, just little things. It can be as simple as just, like I said, double walk by and put her hand on my shoulder, or touch my hand, or just sit close to me as we're watching the TV. Or it can be more significant intimacy. It's a married relationship there. And then there's the communication aspects of these love languages.
With words of affirmation, just give each other compliments. Let them be real, something that's meaningful to them and that lifts them up. Sometimes we try to say something that we think is encouraging, but it might not be what they need to hear at that time. And it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to ask, you know, what makes you feel really good? Words of affirmation is something very special and important to me. It was my second love need, because I grew up in a home where there wasn't a lot of words of affirmation. We had the parents. I was the oldest of the family. And so I got the opportunity to learn very deeply what the word personal responsibility, or being responsible for others, was. Being the oldest, I had to make the best grades. I had to get everything done. I had to watch my brother and sister, and I had to make sure their chores were done before the parents got home, which meant, really, I did my chores and their chores because they didn't do their chores. So, and you know how that goes on. So, but there wasn't a lot of affirmation. I don't blame my parents. My parents didn't learn it growing up. But just to know that somebody appreciates what you do and how you do it, it was really meaningful to me.
And the same is true with the rest of it. Learning to speak into, and you see there's some lists there of different things, and we're going to kind of move through the things to avoid. Again, words of affirmation, those are gentle words, loving words, not harsh words, not cutting words. You know, sometimes we give compliments to people. I used to hear them called left-handed compliments. They're not really compliments at all. They're cutting remarks, but we kind of dress them up real nice and use it as a way to kind of jab our spouse, and that's not helpful. Under quality time, I'm a person, I like time alone. And Deb's always been great. For lots of years, I rode motorcycles, and I'd go out on Saturdays and do a day trip on my bike and take pictures and things. But I have to balance that with my spouse and understand that they have a need for my time as well. Right now, tennis is consuming my life, and so I need to make sure that I'm not playing too much tennis and neglecting her needs.
I think another thing with quality time, and we can all probably relate to this to different levels, is technology. How that crazy iPad or iPhone takes away from your quality time. You know, it used to be growing up, it was the TV. We all wanted to watch the TV. Now we're all sitting there playing on our iPhone or our iPad. We're scrolling Facebook, or we're scrolling MeWe, or we're looking stuff up, or we're shopping on Amazon. And honestly, that can take up so much of our time. I mean, it's kind of funny. There was a time years ago when Trent and I are sitting there in the bedroom. The TV was on. We both have our iPhones in our hands, and we're texting each other. And we're sitting there in the same, we had a king-size bed. We're sitting there side by side. But instead of talking, we were texting each other. So just put the technology away. Don't let it be a barrier. don't let it be something that isolates you, because it's so easy to do that.
I told Deb, we use so much technology in work and at home and everything else, and I said, I can't wait till I retire and throw my phone in the river. And she thinks I'm kidding, but I could live without it. In giving and receiving of gifts, whether we're the recipient or the giver, not getting too materialistic, giving Deb something isn't the same as giving myself to Deb. My investment in her is more important than anything that I can give her, but sometimes we replace that. My dad was a great example. My dad loved us. He was a very coarse, harsh guy, but he would give and give and give to his children to the point of sometimes almost enabling us in a negative way. And he thought that that was his way of showing love, when really we just wanted him to say, hey, man, you did a great job today, or we appreciate you. Mm-hmm. So we can't replace what our partner really needs just by giving things. Acts of service are great. If you can help your spouse in some ways, but be careful not to overcommit to do things that you won't do. I'll be just perfectly honest with you. We've got a bathroom. I've been renovating it for a couple of months now. I've got one panel that I have to build the glass and finish the bathroom. And Deb's been wonderful. Every once in a while she'll say, we close to having that bathroom finished? And she's been really patient with me. And it's been a big job, something I've never really undertaken before. But the thing is, if we're going to commit to something, do it. It's better not to commit at all than to say you're going to do something for your spouse and then not follow through on it. And finally, physical touch. It could go to the point of abuse, or we can be neglectful. And when a person needs touch, we don't give them hugs, or we don't give them affection, or we don't give them the attention that they need. Anybody have any questions or comments about the love languages before we kind of move into the next segment? Because I guess we have about 15 minutes, so we're going to move a little quicker with this because there's a lot to cover. Willard Harley, his work's been used in marriage and relationship training for decades. A lot of the programs, especially programs that members of the Church of Christ are engaged in and stuff, they've based a lot of their work and their research on Harley's 10 emotional needs. He developed this concept called the Love Bank. And what the Love Bank is, think about your spouse, that their emotional needs as a bank account. And every time you do something, especially like those love languages or the emotional needs we're going to talk about here, you make a deposit into their love bank. And so when I give Deb words of affirmation, I make a deposit. When I bring flowers home, I make a deposit.
When I give him a back rub.
She makes two deposits. She gets double credit for that one. And so when we make those deposits, eventually that bank account builds up, and then all of a sudden we mess up. Kind of like leaving the bathroom undone for too long. Our spouse is more likely to give us grace when we make a withdrawal, mm-hmm, if we've spent most of the time investing in their emotional bank account.
Yeah, and it's good just to always be aware of that and try to balance that out to keep your spouse's bank account as full as you can keep it. But there are sometimes those times that come when you are both feel like you're at the bottom. You're empty. You're upset. You both are going at it. You both feel like, I have nothing else to give. This is nothing but conflict coming at each other. And sometimes at that time, one of the two has to kind of dig a little deeper and say, I'm going to step up. Because we two cannot be at each other at the same time. We're going to have to take turns to work it out. So I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to meet their needs. And then later, they can be quiet and meet my needs. Because sometimes it can get so intense and that bank account can be so empty, you've got to give it some space to kind of refill and regroup.
And that's probably, to be perfectly honest, that's probably where we've had our roughest places in our relationship, is when all the kids were in the house, we were both kind of emotionally bankrupt at that point in time, and then some crisis hits. Mm-hmm. And neither of us really had the bandwidth to invest emotionally in the other, and that's where conflict starts, that's where struggle starts. And we went through our bumpy places as a result of that, and We kind of muddled through, to be perfectly honest, some very challenging times when that. But that's why when there's good times, invest. When you have opportunity, invest. When you have a chance to do something positive for your spouse, invest. Because not only do you build up their bank account, but if it gets full enough, it pays interest. And it begins to give back. And so as we look at these, again, these surveys, and I want to encourage you, if you kind of look at, as you flip over, you see the first one's there, need for affection. You really need to set aside time if you're going to go through this, to go through, because each one of these can take 5 or 10 minutes, and there's 10 of them. And as you go through and you score them, it kind of makes you dig down into why is affection an emotional need, and what is it about, and where does it come from, and how does it make me feel, and how does it play out? And so when you really spend a lot of time with these emotional needs and you go through them, you really begin to realize that things bubble up to the top. Now, Deb made an important point earlier and about the fact that it's good to revisit these things from time to time, because almost without exception, what will happen, especially in a relationship that's healthy and couples are working on these things, for example, the emotional needs that pop up on mine, the top two are sexual fulfillment and quality time. But when those things tend to be being met, sometimes they'll drop way down on your list. Not because they're not important to you, but they drop down on your list because your needs are being met. And maybe something else is being neglected and it bubbles up to the top. And so we're always making adjustments in our relationship. So when you go through this and these things come out, a lot of the motivation behind it's going to come out too. Now, I want to add this one caution. When you do this, one, if you're going to spend time together and go through this, do it when you're in an emotionally healthy place. Don't decide, oh, we're in conflict, let's go do the emotional needs questionnaire. Because what's going to happen is you're going to begin pointing out, well, see, you're not meeting this need, you're not doing this for me, and we become self-consumed. The purpose of going through the emotional needs isn't so my needs get met. The purpose of going through the emotional needs is so I can learn what Debbie's needs are and her needs get met. Because when her needs get met, the likelihood is she's going to reciprocate. So flip to the back. Again, there's kind of an adjustment on this as we get towards the end of this. Page 12. And you'll see ranking your emotional needs. And again, here, I'm going to ask Debbie to kind of list 1 through 5, and then I'll list 1 through 5. And I wanted to say something. This comes from a book entitled His Needs, Her Needs by Willard Harley. It's in the front under the resources. But when Harley first wrote this decades ago, one of the things he identified is there were 5 primary needs for women and 5 primary needs for men. And for decades, those things typically held true. But our society and our culture has gotten so confused that now more than ever it's important that you do these emotional needs, because it doesn't necessarily play out the way that Harley says that these are men's needs and these are women's needs. They cross-pollinate a lot now. But Deb, go ahead and just tell us about your top 5 and then explain to me the top couple, why they're so important.
Okay. Well, when I did this and I went through the questions, my top 5 needs in order came, some of them were exactly what I thought was going to be, which was the case of my very first needs, which is honesty and openness. That is super important to me. My second need was intimate conversation. Third, admiration. Fourth, financial support. And fifth, affection. And when I think about the honesty and openness, I knew that was going to be my biggest need from before I started answering the questions and going through it. And I think that's because deep down inside of me, I have this core value, core need of being honest and being open and knowing that I have somebody in my life that I can be truly honest and open with about anything, and that they love and they accept me. And that's just a really big need that I have. The world can be really hard growing up. You know, I was the responsible one. I had to be. I didn't have a choice. I was going to get a switch. If it didn't happen, it was just the way it was. And I didn't have that cocoon that kind of made me have that sense of security with other people, if that makes sense. And so that's one of the things that we have, and I appreciate about you and in our relationship. And then the intimate conversation is feeling like I can talk to Trent about anything, and he's going to be there. And if he, you know, and he may not know what to say, and I can say, that's okay, I don't need you to even talk. Don't fix it for me. Just listen. Let me tell you what I'm thinking, and just listen. And just be there. And those two things are my top two emotional needs, and he knows that. And so we're able to work with that and to build the relationship stronger.
And sometimes she does need to tell me, just be quiet and listen. I don't need you to fix this. I need you to be understanding. I need you to be compassionate. My first thing, she starts telling me a problem. I say, oh, this is what you ought to do, honey. Just be quiet and listen. And so learning to understand that. As I mentioned, my emotional needs, my top was sexual fulfillment, recreational companionship, admiration, affection, and family commitment. And so as we went through those, I talked a little bit about physical touch in before, so I'm not going to go through with the sexual fulfillment part of it because that all plays in together. But the recreational companionship, Deb talked about that a little bit, but one of the things I love is that we do enjoy doing things together, and we had this habit that we would take, and you know, I love the fact, well, we used to go on cruises. We take a cruise every year, and we have this agreement between us, and that is that when you get into port, there's all these different excursions. And so we decided, well, what would be fair was, she said, well, I want to do this. I said, well, I want to do that. So what we do, so we'll each pick one excursion, and the other one will go on it. So the first time we go, I was looking through the excursions, and I'm trying to remember, I may have been we were going to go to Honduras, and we were going to go zip lining. I wanted to go zip lining through Roatan, through the rainforest, and Deb was not excited about that.
Doesn't like heights.
So she agreed. We got there. It was an overcast day. And there's 13 platforms up in these hills in Honduras. So we get to the top, and it's raining lightly, and it's actually kind of cool. It's
really
down in the 60s. And so we start ziplining. We get about halfway down, and I mean the heavens open.
Ooh.
It's just torrential winds. There's like eight of us standing on a platform about as big as this space right here, all crunched in together. The wind is blowing. We're looking down into these valleys. I look back, and Debbie's just sitting here going like this, shivering. And I think, if we ever get to the bottom of this, I am just dead. So they sit there, and they're checking the weather reports and everything else, and they said, the weather's not going to let up. You're just going to have to ride the brakes the rest of the way down. There's no other way down.
And it was the kind of rain, you couldn't even hardly keep your eyes open. It was just so hard.
So we made it down to the bottom, and I kind of look at her, and I'm like, oh. She goes, that was awesome. Just, I want to do that again when the weather's better.
So we did, years later.
And then through the years, I've taken her, we went swimming through cenotes underground in Mexico. We went jumping off cliffs in
Dominican Republic. And
we climbed a waterfall in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of pushed her envelope a little bit.
We did the Dominican Republic thing. He's the adventure junkie, and I'm learning to go that way. I had to watch the video of it for a year, trying to get myself up to doing this jump. Because you're in the Dominican Republic. It's rock cliffs. It's straight down. It's jumping. There's nowhere to go. And when we finally got up there, and I got to the overlook, and I looked down, and I looked back, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. And I watched other people go before me, and I go, okay, 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 4, 5 seconds. I can jump, hit the water, be back up. I can do that. And literally, that is what got me over that first cliff. But I was able to do those jumps, something I never thought I could have done. And I'm glad I did it looking back. Don't want to do it again. But glad I did it looking back, because it was an amazing thing. If you ever want to look up 27 Charcos on the line at Damajagua Falls in the DR. But if it wasn't for him and his love for activity and energy and stuff like that, we wouldn't be doing those kinds of things that we do. We've gotten to go to some neat shopping centers in Cozumel, Mexico, and see some really pretty things. We both like to experience eating different types of foods at different restaurants, so we look it up, and we try to go to the off-street places, so to speak.
She looks them
up. Oh, yeah, I'm always finding my food. What's next? What's next? So we find things to really share and enjoy.
Yeah, if we're going anywhere, I mean, if we're traveling from here to Jacksonville, the first thing she does is TripAdvisor's open, and she's checking all the restaurants where we're going to eat. But we enjoy those things. We do things together. I've got a confession to make. I never cared much for chick flicks, but I watch Hallmark movies with Debbie because that's one of the things recreational she enjoys. And especially in the evening, it helps her relax and chill and that
Even
kind of thing.
Even my Princess Christmas movies.
Well, but
she's watched The Princess for Christmas with me probably a dozen times now over the last few years.
But there's actually one or two of the movies I actually enjoy. I actually like them. So
Yep. The
thing is, we have to learn to invest in, when we just say, well, I don't like that, we're not acknowledging our partner's needs. We're not acknowledging their desire. And if I'm looking up here, I guess our time is kind of running kind of tight there, isn't it, Ron?
So
we're going to wrap it up here. For those of you that are going to turn in to worship this morning, we're going to deal with the hard part of that and how we deal with crisis in a relationship. John Gottman has a thing called the Gottman Institute. He's a leading researcher and deals a lot with crisis management and relationships, and so we'll talk a little bit about that in worship. Would you bow with me briefly for a word of prayer before we dismiss? Father, we thank you for one another. We thank you for our spouses and those that we love. Father, give us open and receptive hearts to understanding our spouse better, listening to them more clearly, and doing the things that show and demonstrate our love for them. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.